Well, hello, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 457 of Sustainable Minimalist. This is a listener-supported show about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. And on today's show, we are discussing all the reasons why we should consider intentional disconnection at least once in a while. So we always talk about connection with other human beings, of course, being so darn important for well-being. But today we're flipping the script. Today we're talking about disconnecting from all of life's distractions. Distractions come in all shapes, sizes, forms. And so today we're seeking to nail down how we can turn away from the distractions at least once in a while. Now let's talk about our brains for a hot minute. Our brains are pleasure-seeking machines. Our brains seek to avoid pain and seek pleasure at every turn. So our biology, compounded by our culture, conditions us to believe that the more pleasant experiences we have, the more social media follows, the more good food we eat, the more good wine we drink, the more good sex we have, the more shopping trips we take. I could go on and on. The more we have, the happier we will be. Well, first of all, if you've been listening to this show for a while, you already know none of that is true. Second of all, when we seek pleasure and avoid pain, we find ourselves just living in anticipation of that next enjoyable thing to experience. There is, of course, the sad fact that so many of us are just sleepwalking through life. We find ourselves swept away by the tide of habitual behavior. We let distractions distract us. And so it's no surprise then that so many of us are feeling deeply unfulfilled. And yes, disconnecting from the noise is certainly difficult, absolutely. But I believe that tuning out the noise is the first step in finding lasting peace and joy, not the dopamine-induced short-lived pleasure that distractions offer. Today we're talking about lasting peace, lasting joy, the stuff that perseveres. So here to help me break down all of this and more is Diane Bowden. Diane is the host of the Minimalist Moms podcast. She's also the author of the nonfiction book, Minimalist Moms. Diane's also my friend. So today we're just really having a conversation between friends. Diane, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. Tell us how you've been, what you've been up to since we talked last.
Oh, I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me back. I always enjoy talking with you. I know we've done a couple of swaps and I always just walk away having learned something and just appreciate your wisdom. So my husband and I recently moved. We were living in Columbus, Ohio, and we recently moved about 40 minutes out to more farmland, country. It feels kind of nice to be more off-grid and not just so attached to city living, which I never thought I could move away from, but I've really been enjoying where we are now. So we did that back in October. Still homeschooling my daughter. Hopefully I might homeschool my son in the fall, and then I'm hoping to start or to launch my new podcast, Clear Intentions, here in the next month or so. My original goal was the first of the year and wishful thinking, but yeah, I'm looking to create some new content and have more intentional conversations with people. I feel like I have gotten rid of the tangible clutter in my life. And so now I have the ability to really sort through the emotional and mental clutter that I'm finding myself still having. And just kind of, I'm not exactly midlife, but kind of just experiencing some midlife crises and of sorts. So just talking to other people about their stories, their clear intentions for their life. And yeah, I'm really excited to kind of start this passion project.
Well, I'll be tuning in because everything you just said there resonates. I feel as though, you know, when I found minimalism, it was about stuff and decluttering, but the stuff is decluttered. The stuff has been decluttered for years. And so without that noise, I find myself naturally turning inward. Who knew there was such a connection between mindfulness and minimalism? So that's something that I try to explore here on the show, and I'm so excited for yours as well. Let's start by you telling us about something I'm absolutely fascinated by, and that is your experience floating. I must say I never knew what floating was before we talked, but tell us about floating.
you basically get in this float tank and there's Epsom salt. I think there's like 1,000 pounds of Epsom salt in there to help you float and stay up. And it's pitch black for an hour. It was funny. When I first got in there, I was just kind of, it's nice to relax. And then I started playing games, like bouncing off the bottom of it because I was getting so bored. And then I just stopped and I started listening to what I was saying. And I was kind to myself. I was mean to myself. I had all of the thoughts come up. And what I left that experience thinking was, I need to be in silence more often. I need to organize these thoughts. I need to be kinder to myself, but also with the ways that I'm not kind, I should take that as a, like, I should pull on that string and see where it leads me. But I don't ever have the mental capacity or quiet or solitude to do that.
So this is fascinating to me. You literally had to be in a room in a bath filled with Epsom salt in pitch darkness to turn inward. I mean, first of all, how many of us get that opportunity? It's literal forced disconnection, right? And it sounds like even though perhaps you were a bit reluctant to turn inward, you didn't have a choice. So what we're trying to nail down today is how each and every one of us listening can reliably and consistently turn inwards in real life, not just in a pitch black room in a bath with lots of salt in it. How can we do that reliably and consistently so that we can make tuning out the noise, disconnecting, and tuning in to ourselves, connecting to ourselves, a habit? This, of course, is really darn hard to do precisely because our modern world is really darn noisy. There's always something that's seeking to grab our attention. So what we're trying to nail down today, listeners, is how can we have the experience of floating, essentially, without the bath, without the darkness, without the phone-free existence? How can we curate that for ourselves? In the months after your floating experience, what have you been doing in your own life to recreate that experience at least a little bit? How have you been trying to disconnect more and tune in more? What's been working for you?
Yeah. So I told you also before we got on the call, I find some of these questions to be slightly overwhelming because I don't feel like I'm the perfect person to ask on how to disconnect. I think that I have filled my life up. And that's why I said at this point, I'm like, okay, actually, now that you, again, don't have the tangible things, you really need to start addressing relationships and things that you're filling your schedule with and scrolling every night before you go to bed. I like to exist in kind of a more chaotic realm. My husband says sometimes I like the drama. And that just seems to be in such contrast to what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to tell people is such a benefit to their life in quieting the noise, meditating, being in solitude. And so it's like, I'm just having to confront myself in the mirror to say, do you actually believe this? Are you a hypocrite? Why are you not living it out? Is it good for everyone else, but you're still okay functioning here? Are you afraid to let go of something because maybe you won't be as successful or you won't have as many friends or fill in the blank? So it's a lot of this like mental work of what it looks like to actually disconnect. So the way that I would say I disconnect is I'm just in nature constantly. I think that there's something, even if you're not religious, if you're spiritual, there is just some sense of connection and peace when you go out and disconnect in nature, even if it's for an hour. Going outside, even when it's nice out, to like take a nap in the sun in a hammock or on a blanket, that kind of just takes you back to, like you said, years ago when we didn't have screens to occupy our time. So I would say just if I'm not in nature, I love to just connect with friends over coffee and have intentional conversations. Just bringing that whatever we're doing on our phones out into real life. I think that's something that's really sad to me about the younger generations is that they can't, I shouldn't say they can't, but they aren't as good at the face-to-face. They're so used to connecting this in this artificial way on social media, and they can't sit and talk for hours.
Well, yeah, I mean, you bring up so many important points there. And I'm so happy that you brought up nature there, because I've been trying to be more of an observer of myself and my mood and my thoughts. This has been a journey. Again, we talked about how minimalism was a gateway towards mindfulness and deeper inner introspection. And so I've been doing that in my personal life for the last year or so. And what I've learned about myself is there are profound rejuvenation benefits when I'm in nature. And I've always liked the outdoors. I've always thought it was pretty or whatever, but it's much deeper than that. I feel one way when I rest, you know, sitting on the couch, scrolling on my phone, maybe watching TV. That yields one outcome for me, well-being wise. But going out in nature consistently offers a much deeper, much richer wellness benefit for me. And almost always, you know, I can just be sitting outside, but it seems to me to be when I'm outside and moving my body, that's the special sauce for me. And so when we plug into the perhaps inauthentic aspects of our culture, what we're really doing is we're disconnecting from perhaps the places in which real connection, real rejuvenation comes. And for me, and it sounds like for you too, the real rejuvenation comes from nature.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the second piece of that to me, because I like to go outside and run or even take a faster walk. And another thing that I do that I don't think is helpful is always having something in my head, a podcast or music, where I'm on the phone. And it is so difficult to remove yourself from the noise so that you can be alone with your own thoughts. And I think that the reason there's probably many reasons why people don't want to be alone with their own thoughts, because sometimes you don't like what you hear.
I'm so happy you brought that up, Diane, because for a lot of us, myself included, when we do quiet the external noise, when we do disconnect from those external distractions, so many of us find ourselves in the commotion of our own minds, and we want to escape our own minds, hence reverting back to picking up the phone or going on to social media or checking our work email or turning on the news or doing what all of the external things, plugging back into the distractions. I will say for me personally, I've learned about myself historically that I do not allow myself to grieve. I don't allow myself to feel negative emotion, shame, disappointment, sadness, grief, because those emotions tend to be really darn uncomfortable. I don't want to sit with them. So what is the consequence of that? The consequence of it is that these negative emotions are showing up elsewhere in my life. They're showing up physically in my body. They're showing up in just a general agitation towards life. So I say all that to say, you know, we can't ignore our own selves. We can't ignore our own selves. We can't run away from ourselves and our feelings. The only way out is through. So when I have this white space, I actually am working on, I don't want to say forcing myself, but I guess a better way to say would be like providing the environment in which, if I feel like the time is right, to feel those negative emotions, feel the shame, feel the disappointment, feel the grief if that's something that's coming up for me. Because for whatever reason, and perhaps it is because I'm always distracted by this, that, and the other thing, I've been neglecting the process of sitting with negative emotions. And I know what that's done for me personally, and we don't have to go into that today. But I do think that perhaps all the external noise is creating a culture, a group of people that don't know how to sit with negative emotions because there's always a distraction. Does that resonate for you at all?
Absolutely. And I have been seeking out so much wisdom about this because I know that, I mean, we can go real deep. I don't mind sharing my story. So like, I'm happy to talk about anything. I'm an open book, but I would say that there are definitely things that I've probably suppressed, just painful experiences, nothing huge, but things that I've suppressed because I haven't wanted to sit with that pain. I just put it in a box and it's like, I'm good. Like I can still function. Sitting with that pain though and going through it, then you come out on the other side. Like you have to go through the darkness to get to the light sometimes. I think that I am the same way. I have kind of just put pain in a box and not negativity, but I am an optimist. I usually look on the bright side. I usually think the best of people, and anything that's painful, I have to justify. So if something bad happens, it's like, well, this then this would have happened, so that I don't have to sit with like, no, actually something bad happened and you have to go through that and process that.
Yes. All right, Diane. So we got pretty deep, pretty fast. I love it. We're going to take our sponsor break, but when we come back, I have a lot of things I want to talk about. I want to talk about work because, hey, guess what? It's 2024 and we're working around the clock thanks to those really darn powerful computers that are always logged on that we keep in our pockets. I want to talk about work. I want to talk about meditation. I want to talk about shopping. And maybe we'll even touch on clutter because clutter is distraction. We're going to get into all of that after our quick sponsor break. Mother's Day is around the corner and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts. When my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift. And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. And we're back. Today, I'm speaking with Diane Bowden. Diane is the host of the Minimalist Moms podcast. She's the author of Minimalist Moms. I love it. It's on my bookshelf. And she's also my friend. Today, we're talking about intentional disconnection, disconnecting from the noise at least once in a while so that we can sit in the quiet. Diane, we're on to the part in today's conversation where I want to talk about two very specific sources of noise, at least in my life. The first is shopping and the second is work. So let's go to shopping first. I'm thinking about blue laws. For anybody who doesn't know what a blue law is, back in the day, these blue laws were essentially Sunday restrictions against commercialism here in the United States. Blue laws prohibited things such as selling liquor, opening stores. Blue laws were intended to encourage Americans to go to church. But these days, religiosity is down and emphasis on the economy is up. And yes, I know in parts of the United States, you know, you can't buy liquor on Sundays or stores don't open till noon. However, an awful lot of people are shopping on Sundays these days. And I know this because I recently went to the mall. My daughter, first of all, let me just say, I do not go to the mall. It's been at least a year and a half since I've been to the mall. I don't know the last time my kids have gone to the mall. Years, definitely years for them. But my 10-year-old daughter recently had a birthday party and she wanted to do an escape room type thing with her friends. And the escape room just so happened to be at the mall. So picture me and five 10-year-old girls walking through the mall to get to this escape room. It was quite an experience because number one, the mall was so unbelievably crowded on this Sunday. And number two, it was a gorgeous day outside. And for me personally, I would not have been at the mall on this Sunday, on this gorgeous day, had it not been for my daughter's birthday party. So my question for you here, Diane, is what are you doing in your life to step away from our culture's emphasis, overemphasis on commercialism? Because again, buying all the stuff, all of that is essentially a distraction. It's noise. And we're talking today about disconnecting from all that unnecessary noise.
Yeah. So I love that this was one of the things that we were going to talk about because my faith is really important to me. I do try to go to church on Sundays. I just honestly like the ritual. I also think it is interesting that our society set up for Sunday to be the Sabbath when there are so many religions and melting, like it's such a melting pot of religions. I know not even my pastor does a Sabbath on Sunday. He's working on Sunday, so he takes a Sabbath on Monday. So it really is kind of these artificial rules that our society set up to say, like, this is the day that you rest. But like you said, that consumerism and like wanting to fill all the days of the week with shopping and doing all that exists. I don't want to contribute to that. So showing up to Target, I haven't really been to Target in years. I will pop in there every blue moon. But I can see how if I wasn't aware of this, I would just feel less than because I didn't have all the stuff, all the cute new home goods and making my house look perfect. I'm coming to you from like a bed on my floor with no decorations in this room. Like, if I really focused on it and felt like I wasn't seeking out information to tell me otherwise, I would have this whole room decorated and it would probably look like everyone else's space and I would be in debt over it. And you just have to start slowly changing your mind. Just being honest with myself and rational about like the bigger game here can help you kind of not get angry, but in a sense, like get angry to say like, I don't want to be a pawn in this bigger game. And it helps you step away a little bit more. But again, going back to that element of nature, it is so important to me to be outside. And I wouldn't say that I was always like that. Maybe when I was little and then you kind of fall away in your teenage, early 20 years, it is a place of rejuvenation, like I said, for me. And it's something that I just want to keep. I signed up for a hike in August. It's a 20-mile hike that I'm going to be doing. So just like things like this to prompt me to make the time for it has been really helpful. This month, I really, really want to cultivate the habit of meditation. I did just download the app. It's called Waking Up. It's by Sam Harris. He's an author and it's all about just being more present in the moment, being more mindful. So I'm dabbling a little bit with that, just sitting and listening to some of those meditations. I've heard mass benefits of meditation. I can recommend some podcasts and some books, but I think I've always been doubtful or have never understood how people could do that for 20 or 30 minutes. But the piece of the people that I know that do that, I'm like, I want that. I need that. I think I would be less reactive and like parenting or with my husband, if we're fighting, I would be less reactive in public. I just want to find more, for lack of a better term, zen. And I think that being alone with those thoughts, organizing those thoughts, sitting in silent solitude out in nature, I just think it's all connected and so important and we don't do it.
You said a couple of things there that I want to touch on. The first is you're trying to cultivate a habit, perhaps using an app. I'm here for that. I've been meditating for many years now, and I started with one app, then I moved to another app, and now I do not use an app. In my opinion, apps are, like the meditation apps I'm talking about, they are profoundly useful for those of us just starting out, for those of us just trying to build the habit. But I do want to say that we all need to remember, we do not need to spend money on a meditation app to meditate. Meditation is the OG free wellness activity. Sure, of course, our capitalistic society has commercialized meditation with apps and retreats and books and CDs and gurus selling all the things, right? But none of it is needed. It's not necessary. We always find a way to monetize everything, don't we? We've even found a way to monetize sitting quietly with ourselves. And that brings me to another important point, which is, of course, that when we are disconnected from ourselves and connected, plugged in to all the noise, what we're really doing is we're keeping the economic engines that run our society going. Being plugged in to the shopping, to the next big sale, to the app that you pay $5.99 a month for, or whatever it is, right? It's benefiting our capitalistic culture, but is it benefiting us? So for me, the number one way that I ensure that I disconnect Monday through Friday, because my kids are at school Monday through Friday, is I write it on my planner. My longtime listeners know that I am a planner freakazoid. I love to write down my to-do list and cross things off. It's something about the crossing off that just feels so good. So I write, meditate, and journal on my to-do list every, well, Monday through Friday. The weekends are like Chaos. But that helps. That really does help. Another quick tip for listeners who aren't ready for a 10, 15, 20 minute meditation, but are interested in inserting a bit more mindfulness into their lives. The next time you find yourself reflexively reaching for your phone, so you have a second to breathe, most of us reach for our phone, right? Well, instead of reaching for your phone, restrain yourself and just try to stay present for one breath. So one inhale and one subsequent exhale. If you can stay present without your mind wandering for one inhale and exhale, next time try to do two full breaths. This is my top tip for mindfulness newbies. It starts the process of getting in touch with you. And I should say here too, going back to the fact that our brains are pleasure-seeking machines, we can teach our brains through meditation that staying calmly in the present moment feels better. It does feel better than just flitting from here to there, flitting from one distraction to the next. So what does this mean? This means, again, that over time, if you stick with meditation, if you cultivate that habit, your brain will want more and more minutes of disconnection. And now, speaking of the economic machines, we've got to go there. We've got to talk about work. My husband, if you're listening, you got to turn off the work sometimes. In 2024, so many of us, my husband, definitely, myself, sometimes we find that that work-life balance remains elusive. We have to work doubly or triply as hard to prove ourselves when we're first starting out. And if we make a little bit of headway, so many of us feel as though we have to continue to work at that frenetic pace for fear of falling backwards. This is all compounded by the fact that we're always at work, essentially. Like, if our home is our workspace, and if our phone or our computer is always on our person, on our body, then work can get a hold of us at all times.
I think with our phones, for anyone working, we used to clock out, like do a 9 to 5, and then you were done. Like, people didn't necessarily have cell phones that they could get gotten a hold of after 5 o'clock. But I feel like I'm constantly working. I'm constantly like in the fringes, sending back emails, like connecting with who's going to be on the podcast. I never turn it off. And I think a lot of people probably relate to that with their work. It's like, oh, I'm always available because I need to respond to a text within a certain amount of time. And it's like, said who? Who says that? Who says that you have to be available after a certain time? Like, set those boundaries. So I think that makes us, we haven't really touched on hurry, like hurry culture and like not slowing down that way. But I think that's like kind of connected to like the busy success culture, like wanting to succeed and then hurry. I don't know. I think it's all connected.
I do too. You mentioned hurrying, you know, overwork. That's a big American value. And so they all come to a head in which you and me and perhaps some of our listeners today are saying, well, wait a minute, is all of this benefiting me personally? And so maybe it is. Like, maybe it is. And if so, this is not the conversation that's really going to help you. But for those of you in which it's not working, perhaps you can find some camaraderie.
Solidarity.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
the other thing, sorry, this is something I have to say as well. And I think I read this in The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer, which is a religious book, but it is also, if you're not religious and you can kind of look over that, it is so excellent and highly recommend. But one of the things that he mentions is that with sunlight, like with the amount of time that we have during the day, like people had to actually just stop working at a certain time because they only had candlelight to live by. Like, we were really dictated. Our lives were dictated by the sun. And we had the systems of the winter where we would rest more. In the summer, we would be a little bit more, not energetic, but we would work more. And now we're just so disconnected because we have ambient light. And we have the light that we can just shine in our houses. We can work all night. So we used to just be more dictated by the cycles, the natural cycles of the earth.
Yes. No, that makes total sense. I mean, turning back or turning forward the clocks. I can never get it right, but we did something to the clocks. And now I feel rejuvenated. Like, I feel ready to do more things at night. I mean, let's go back to having nature be our guide, I think is what you're saying there. So I'm my own boss and I'm really privileged to be able to set my own rules, but I've had to put up boundaries with regard to my work and when I'm on versus when I'm off. Something that I've enacted in the last maybe 6 months to a year is that when I'm in my off hours, which is usually when my kids get off the bus around 3 to 3:30 until the next morning, 8 a.m. when they get back on the bus. So for my off hours, I take my work email off my phone. So I have an iPhone, my Gmail, my work Gmail is one of my, it's on my mail app. I click the sliding button so that I no longer see my work email on my phone during those hours. It's not hard to do. It takes 30 seconds, but the disconnection benefits I get from doing that are gigantic. I do not have the restraint to look at my phone at, let's say, dinner time, see a work email there and not read it. I just don't have that restraint. So I've put up a boundary there that, oh, this is family time. This is off time. I don't even have to see the work email. So out of sight, out of mind does work for me in that regard. One more critical piece to the puzzle that I want to touch on before we wrap up, Diane, is you mentioned to me before we started recording that you have found that the distractions of daily life, the noise, has resulted in you having a diminished attention span. Can you speak to that for us?
Watching a 90-minute film versus watching an 8 to 40-second reel on my phone, it's just my dopamine pleasure centers are lighting up every time that I do that. And I need more, I need more, I need more. I've heard that social media has been not formatted, but it's similar to slot machines and the way that they run Las Vegas. Like, they want us hooked. They want us addicted. They want those little dopamine hits. It's the same as if you put money in a slot machine and you win 25 cents. You're going to keep doing it, even if it wasn't a lot of money. If you actually get honest with yourself, not much comes of that flipping through reels. It's entertaining. And I don't watch TV. I would say that that is my quick entertainment. But it also scares me because it has lessened my attention span to where I can't really even watch movies anymore. And that's embarrassing to admit, but it is so hard to just go sit and watch a movie.
Okay, so this is so fascinating to me, Diane, for two reasons. The first is there's a scientific name for what you're experiencing there. It's continuous partial attention. Continuous partial attention is when we're motivated to connect and stay connected. We're scanning opportunities. We're optimizing opportunities. We just don't want to miss anything that's going on. And our attention span by default is lowered by trying to stay connected to all the things at once. Of course, continuous partial attention does affect our attention spans, but it also may lead to increased stress and decreased ability to focus and concentrate on the present moment. So how many of us, think to yourselves, be honest with yourself, you're watching a movie or you're watching TV at the end of the night, and you're also scrolling on your phone. That's continuous partial attention in real life, right? It prohibits reflection, prohibits contemplation, completely abolishes the opportunity for our mindfulness. And here's the real kicker. Continuous partial attention can decrease thoughtful decision-making. Holy moly, right? And so this is a great example of our brains seeking out short-term happiness. And I have a quote. It's kind of long, Diane, and this is awkward reading a quote from somebody else's book. But I just read this book. I digested it in about 4 hours, the whole thing, start to finish. It's called 10% Happier, and it's by journalist, news anchor Dan Harris. Definitely recommend it for any of you budding meditators. It's a great entry to meditation book. But here's the quote. Again, it's kind of long. Quote, as soon as we get the next meal, party, vacation, sexual encounter, as soon as we get married, get a promotion, get to the airport check-in, get through security, and consume a bouquet of Auntie Annie's cinnamon sugar sticks, we'll feel really good. But when we find ourselves in the airport gate area, having ingested 470 calories worth of sugar and fat before dinner, we don't bother to examine the lie that fuels our lives. We tell ourselves we'll sleep it off, take a run, eat a healthy breakfast, and then finally everything will be complete. We live so much of our lives pushed forward by these if-only thoughts, and yet the itch remains. The pursuit of happiness becomes the source of our unhappiness. End quote. I wanted to read this quote today, Diane, because I feel like it really hits the nail on the head. We're chasing after external distractions, but what's the result? Our seeking out happiness here, there, everywhere is creating our own sense of being unfulfilled. I feel like for me, minimalism was my gateway into living a bit differently. Differently than the masses, let's say. And so minimalism now has morphed into, like we said at the beginning, we're bringing it back around. Like my house is decluttered. There's no more physical stuff that I can declutter. What I can now declutter is the intangible noise that I can't put into a bag and stick on the curb. By decluttering the noise, which is where my focus has been for the last year or so, I've been looking inward.
I felt the same way. Again, it could be chalk it up to just being midlife and just reevaluating again this sense of identity and legacy. And my kids, I mean, my youngest is four, he's still little, but I believe I'm done having babies. And so it's like stage of my life is over. And now I'm at this stage with a little bit older children. And then what does it mean when they're gone? And then I'm left with myself and my husband. And like, do I like who I am? Do I know what I believe? Where are my values rooted? So all this stuff, again, I think the tangible stuff, it seems so hard for some people, and it is when you first address it. But once you go through it, it's like, actually, this is the hard stuff, getting your mind right. Thank God my house is in a good place so that I can actually address some of this inner work that I'm doing.
Yeah, as you're talking there, I'm thinking about what I believe, which is essentially, I believe that we are each, all of us listening, we're on our own unique, individual, respective journeys. So your journey is taking you to one place. My journey is unique and individual and taking me to another place. However, we are all united. Each and every one of us are united in the fact that the hustle and bustle of modern life is distracting us from our own past, our own journeys. And so it's easy to forget in 2024 that our time and our presence are our most valuable assets, right? So if we can disconnect from the hustle and bustle, disconnect from the noise, what we're really doing is we're clearing the path. We're clearing our own individual past so we can get to our destination, whatever that destination may be. I'm still trying to find my destination. I'm trying to figure out what my destination is. But wow, Diane, what a conversation. Tell my listeners where they can find you and all your goodness online.
Well, I'm at Minimalist Moms Podcast on Instagram. My book is Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity. It really is just like a beginner starting point of mantras that you want to ruminate on throughout the week to help you live a more intentional life. And then, like you said, my new podcast, Clear Intentions, I hope to release in May. And this is really just me talking to other individuals that have, I don't want to say doing the work, but they have gone through processes and seemed like they have clear intentions for their life and how they want to continue out their days.
Diane, thank you so much. I cannot wait to tune into your new podcast. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, that's a wrap, my friend. Show notes are at mamaminimalist.com/456. If you like this show and receive benefit and get something out of this nonconformist topic that we're discussing today and every day, if you get something out of it, please consider supporting the show. You can do so financially with $5 a month. You'll get a bunch of stuff for $5 a month. If you can't support financially, I understand that. Absolutely. Perhaps you can support the show with a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Perhaps you can support the show by telling a friend about it. Perhaps you can support the show by sharing some content with your network. All those ways are ways to support the show. And I thank you for all of those ways, because guess what? The noise that Diane and I talked about today drowns out small creators. So thank you so much. Now, we do have an eco tip today, and it comes from Jatu. Jatu's tip is a simple, tangible, and actionable tip, and that is to use scrunchies instead of hair ties. Hair ties often break, but scrunchies last longer. You can drop it in the washing machine if it needs a quick wash. I will say, too, that I don't know if I purchased them or if they were sent to me, but the eco-friendly hair ties, they're, you know, a brown color. They're not plastic-based. I will say I've used those and they stretch out. And after they stretch out, they're not usable anymore, so they're going to the trash can. The conventional hair ties, too, like, they stretch out and they break. They snap. So I have thick hair. Scrunchies don't traditionally work for my hair, but I'm going to try it, Jatu. Thank you so much for your tip. Excellent one. We will be back, listeners, on Thursday. I will see you then. Reach out if you need me, and take care.